I can't see you. You've disappeared from the screen, which is fine. That's okay. It might actually make the video better. So, no offense.
I just hit the audio only one. That's what it was saying. So,
dude, how are you?
You know, I'm good, man. Good. It's been kind of a crazy winter where, you know, we come down here November into Texas. We have a house here, and then I roll back up in 2 weeks, probably. Yeah, a little over 2 weeks. Back to get ready for spring bear, so pretty stoked about that. But it's 26 degrees right now.
Where are you? Where's here?
Well, where we live is between San Antonio and Austin, and then a bit west out in the hill country. So that's green grass you see.
Oh, dude, I'm looking out my window right now, and there's still, like, I don't see anything other than white.
Yeah, but you got big whitetail antlers laying on the ground right now. So
somewhere. I'll never find them, but yeah, allegedly. You were good at that for a while. You guys went hard at that for a while. And I don't know. I just kind of always liked them attached to the animal's head, and it never really grabbed onto me to go and collect antlers. But
now it's completely out of control. Like in the bow zone now. I mean, they're doing freaking shows on it. Good guys. I know a lot of them. You know a lot of them. But man, there's nothing like bringing attention to potentially the best as far as big whitetails in the world.
You know, I kind of go back and forth on that. Like, I was talking with my friend Mark. I'm going turkey hunting with him down in southern BC. And they are having, like, encounters. Like, Alberta hunters can go and hunt turkeys in BC with nothing more than an upland bird license. And and of course, you can imagine how many guys there are in Alberta that want to go hunting turkeys. And so there's actual fights breaking out in the hills of southern BC. Like, I live exactly 3 miles from the bow zone, from where I killed that big buck 2 falls ago. And so, you know, I get the whole idea of gatekeeping, of wanting to keep people out of your area, and permissions are, well, you know, you outfitted in that zone. Permissions can be hard to begin with, right? But I don't know, dude. There's still lots of room for people to
be. No, I agree with you. And, you know, I mean, my first guided shed hunt was 94. Those were the heydays, man. I probably did 10 years. I still get calls on a monthly basis for shed hunting. And more now than ever before, because, you know, stateside down here, no one shed hunts in Texas because it's predominantly private, and all they have to do is drive up to their feeders to pick up the shed. So you're not going to get far down here, but it's become such a huge draw, and it all has to do, majority of it is with pages on social media, is content. And so states like Utah, Arizona, Montana, Wyoming, I might be wrong on a couple of those, and there's a lot more now that are putting shed seasons in where you can't start shed hunting till May 1st.
And what, just to keep guys out of the woods so they're not disturbing the deer, I guess that's a sensitive time for them too, right?
If you go online, mostly last year, year before, there's guys that are going out and sitting on a 400-inch bull until he drops. Days, weeks. And so what's happening is the mid, you know, I mean, pretty much all of the middle part of the United States and north gotten killed by snow. They're dying. Like, they're actually doing feeding programs because the snow is, you know, 4 or 5 feet deep, and some of that higher stuff, wintering areas down low has got, you know, 3 feet or whatever. And these deer aren't surviving. So you go waltzing in there. Now, that also pertains to snowmobilers. See, snowmobilers, hikers, and people like that, they don't have any rules against that.
Yeah,
it's against the shed hunting because, you know, 180 whatever right hand side of an elk is worth big money. It's worth a lot of attention. Oh, dude,
I sold, so out of the loop on this. I feel like, oh my
dude,
goodness.
I sold a match pair whitetail, 170, maybe 4 inches roughly, with a decent inside spread for $2,500.
Why? Like, what
people are collecting them, man. I don't know. There was a couple guys that had up like anything else.
Like, just okay. Like baseball cards and Star Wars toys. Okay.
Or like, you know, kind of weird, obsolete backpacks, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess.
I mean, yours is
impossible. No, I get it. So good.
I love your backpack, dude. Your backpack is money. Is that what is?
Dude, you were mocking me. I didn't even pick up on that.
I am not mocking.
Dude, you're constantly mocking me, which is why you had the soft ban from my Instagram account. That
oh, dude. Well, no, I love it, man. It's like is that a what is that a satchel? What do you call that?
Dude, it's not a purse, dude.
No, I know it's not a purse, but I'd like to see you put a whole whitetail in the back of that thing. That's your job.
Dude, See, that's the thing. When you're as bad a hunter as I am, you don't have to worry about cubic centimeters of storage space in your pack. You just...
I don't know, dude. You knocked down a giant mule deer. That whitetail, well, we both know what it takes to shoot a whitetail like that. That's...
You and I have been responsible for a few big whitetails going down, haven't we, over the years?
Yeah, yeah. I could write a 2-volume book on all the ones I've screwed up, and I'm not kidding you, with pictures.
And, dude, I could contribute heavily to that book.
We could have a series, like an Archie Digest series.
Oh, dude, and, that's a brilliant idea. Just have stories of how hunts have gone completely sideways. Oh,
and then we do volume 2, which is mule deer, and we go down south. And anyway, that's a fun one. You can't kill them all, dude. That's not fun.
This is The Traditional Bowhunter's Journey, a show brought to you by the Traditional Bowhunter magazine and the Food Afield podcast. A series filled with the tips, techniques, and strategies from long-established traditional bowhunting experts. Welcome to the world of traditional and primitive archery and bowhunting. How to get started, how to get better.
Everybody, I am here today with my good friend, my very old friend, Jeff Lander. Jeff is the owner, operator, the founder, the creator of Primitive Outfitting. We'll tell some stories here today, but Primitive Outfitting got its start early 90s, mid-90s?
Yeah, 95. The first year of running them. I mean, you and I, you know, in part, I think the reason why both of us kind of grew up under, or at least our guiding careers under the tutelage of Jim Hole Jr., which learned a lot of good things from Jim, and more so on how to present yourself to landowners, just in general, like no camouflage. I mean, very professional. That's where we started, man. And, you know, one of the things I remember about you, because you were the one teaching me, because I knew nothing, it was like, okay, Lander, here's the deal. You said, go in there 40 yards and slap a stand down, and I'll wait for you here. And I'm like, where are we? And no, just trust me. Just go in there 40 yards. I said, this is a major highway. Yeah, we kill big deer along, roads and highways. And I'm like shaking my head going, yeah, whatever. Of course, my first setup. The steps are like 3 feet apart. You had to be a yoga instructor to get into my stand. And anyway, yeah, that's a lifetime ago, dude. Lifetime and guiding up north, almost getting killed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Fun up stuff. In bear hunting, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There was, that was first. I remember one of my best guiding setups was Neil Heaton. Do you remember? Well, were you around with Neil? Yeah,
I do remember Neil.
Yeah, so Neil was a pitcher with the Pittsburgh Pirates and a few other teams, major league teams. But anyways, not that that really matters, but it's just kind of a cool story. So Neil came up hunting, and one of our tricks when we were outfitting was that you'd never put a guy in a good stand on the first night or two, hey? Anyways, so I remember there was this one spot I had, and it was a piece of bush about the size of my house, out in the middle of four-quarter sections of land. And I had driven out there once and saw deer tracks in the mud. And this is how good the bow zone is that from a guiding standpoint, all you had to do, at least back then, was find deer tracks, right? Because if you found deer tracks, there was going to be like a gag or a buck nearby, like just guaranteed, right? And I threw Neil my first. I thought, well, there's no way this is ever going to work. So let's put Neil in here. the first night. And I think it was the first night he's like, he came back to the truck after dark, so excited because he had seen this huge buck. And I was like, really?
Wait, what?
Are you serious? he ended up killing that thing too. I think it was the third morning. He just was relentless, wouldn't go anywhere other than that stand. And I think by the second day, you know, he had, whatever. He just wasn't seeing deer. And then so we made the call on the third day to put him in there in the morning instead of the evening, and he smoked it. So that was a good story.
Well, I mean, look how different, though, things are now, John. The Edmonton Bow Zone at any given time, and we've given this speech 1,000 times, a giant can walk by you. Oh, and man. Also at any time, you're not going to have a lot of deer. You know, if you see a buck, he's probably going to be big. That was before iHunter, you know, map systems. That was before cameras. That was before everything that's going on now. I mean, it was kind of the easier good old days. Now, with these cameras and, you know, I mean, the success rate has just exploded. And and there's still, I mean, I watched a couple, you know, like Gunther, who bought some of my tags, Tondelier with Wizard Lake Outfitting, is probably the guy in the Edmonton Bow Zone now, period. Like, the stuff he's killing is insane, and he's really upped his game as far as posting video. You know, he's got these cameras and they put these out there. It's really fascinating the size of deer they're still killing there, every bit as good as it was when we were in there.
Yeah,
like bit as good,
because yeah, I believe that
they serve. I mean, the reason why I think that one we shot, or I shot, one of my guys did, he was 305 pounds dressed. He was 118 inch whitetail buck, 305.
Oh my goodness.
I mean, that's a Brahma bull, man. And
yeah, no yeah, doubt, eh?
We do. I mean, they are in that 250 to 300. They have to be to survive the Edmonton, the northern period. Genetically, yeah, they're superior. I have a feeder in my backyard just to watch deer, and they are literally 100 pounds, the big bucks, 100 and a quarter.
Big, really?
125. Yeah, no, they're tiny.
Are those, so those wouldn't be coos though, right? Those, or are they?
No, they're just a different, whatever. They're white tails, but they're just I would call them a different, like a subspecies of what we have up there.
Yeah, because coos, yeah, they're in where? Arizona, Mexico, New Mexico kind of thing, right?
The coos deer? Yes. Yeah. They're down, they're Arizona. Yeah. Arizona, Mexico is the main, kind of the main ones, where everyone's going now. I've hunted coos a couple times. They're so jiggy, man. Like everything's trying to kill them. Like, I had a mountain lion walk by me one time. I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool. But, but now it's the same thing. Arizona now is all on draw because it's another season. It's a December, January season for a coos deer when nothing else is open. Warm weather. It's so much fun, mostly when you're coming down from a cold climate, to hunt there, because it's just like
green,
beautiful and new. Everything's new down there. I mean, everything will bite you. You know, it's got a needle on it. But you live in a good place, man. Like your old farm. Yikes.
Oh, geez. It's funny. I was just, I just re-edited the episode that I did with Don Thomas, like just before I was talking to you now. And I told you the whole story is kind of boring, but anyways, like I switched over from podcast hosts, right? And there was like some watermarks or some old, verbiage in that episode about the old podcast host. So my new podcast host wouldn't circulate the episode properly, so like nobody was hearing these old episodes. So I just redid it just posted it. But anyways, I'm listening to it all over again. This is from last year, almost exactly a year ago, and we were talking about that old property of mine, and in that episode with Don, and that was a special place. I killed some big deer there and saw bigger and missed bigger. I missed. There we go with the stories of missing deer. So tell me about your bear hunting operation. Where are you?
We're kind of if you know where Jasper National Park in Alberta, which most people have been there, know where that's at. It's west of there, about an hour and a half, kind of in the foothills. I mean, we got Rockies and I guess the Caribou Mountains, which is kind of the buffer before the Rockies. So, we're about, east of Prince George, BC, and west of Jasper. But it's just a pretty untouched piece of land. My area is 980 square miles. I lease an area adjacent to me that's 2,000 square miles.
It's remote, eh? There's not a lot of people up there, is there?
The ones that are in my area are usually there because they're hiding from something. so we've got the it's kind of the Addams Family / Star Wars bar kind of vibe out there. I make sure to share meat. People need help. I'll see them walking along the road, whatever. I get to know everyone because I leave that place. I leave mid-October and I don't show up until mid-April. Brings bears and his black bears. There's a very high population of bears in my area. Primarily bears, black bears. When they reopen grizzlies, it'll be a rush. Guys will be wanting to get up there. And then in the fall in BC is moose. There's a little bit of elk, but I'd never book strictly an elk hunt just because you could probably not see one, but there are big ones there. They're starting to move in because they're logging a lot in my area. The problem in my area is that there's no wintering ground for the elk. And, to speak of, but now with the logging that's going on, they're killing all, I think it's spruce beetle or something. They're mm-hmm. getting ahead of it. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's the same bug that eats the pine beetle or pine trees. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know enough. Yeah. But, so they are logging considerably.
Go ahead.
No, I'm just going to say it's kind of a double-edged sword. I mean, it opens up country for the critters to eat and whatnot, but it also kind of spreads them out. And so last year, after 2 years of no bear hunting because of COVID, we had our best year as far as giant bear. I think we shot 5 over 7 foot, but they're spread out a little more. So you'd think you'd see bears walking around everywhere after 2 years of freedom, but they weren't. It was no different. It's just bigger.
Those bigger bears were eating all the cubs, I suspect, right? Not all the cubs. Yeah. I'm exaggerating, but I mean, there's a lot of predation that goes on with those big boars.
I've watched them, cubs and moose calves. Mm-hmm. And I did learn the other day, I was reading an article where there are bears that are like specialists in killing mm-hmm. moose. And there was mm-hmm. one, I think he was in Alaska. I think I don't remember what he killed, 23 of them or something. But don't quote me on that, but it was a high number of calves for 1 year. Because they had them collared.
Oh, wow.
They're proficient. And when you see a cow moose in my area and her mouth is wide open and you can tell she's stressed, you just wait because behind her is going to be a hammer boar. And he usually goes home with us if that's the case. Always.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
If there's a bear on a cow moose, it's a big one. It's a big boar.
Oh, so, really? Yeah, oh, interesting. Mm-hmm. So they're chasing these cows around in the spring because they're about to drop calves.
They drop calves in whenever, late June sometime. And when they're pregnant and they must emit, fluid and whatever, yeah. And they get on them.
Wow. Interesting.
Just swallow.
And so, did you still have some openings?
But I've also seen them chase cubs too. Yeah. I've got some openings. I got 44 guys in right now, which is a pretty good spring. Second best spring. Last year was pretty killer, but I think I'll be pushing 50. Which is great. If not, that's fine too. It's just fun.
So how do people book a hunt with you?
A lot of his stuff is word of mouth. And then they get a hold of me. They, friends of friends and then Instagram is a big one too. Ironically, I'm just going to be launching my new website here in the next, probably in a week. I got a company doing it down here and it's going to be pretty skookum.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So.
Do you have the name figured out yet for people to look for it, or just I guess you're going to Google primitive outfitting, right?
Yeah, it'll be theprimitiveoutfitting.com. My last guy who was running my website didn't pay up my monthly or yearly deal. And then all of a sudden I get an email from a guy saying, hey, I got your website, which was primitiveoutfitting.com. If you want it back, it's $1,500. And I told them to pound sand. And, and so then they just, they registered the Primitive Outfitting, whatever, kind of lame, but it is what it is. And
no, I like
we'll have hats and we'll have Yeti cups and stickers and can pay their hunts on, you know, by credit card, which a lot of guys ask because they get air miles like I do. I'm sure you do well.
Okay. So right now, you know, if you're going to fill up what few hunts you have left, guys can just get a hold of you through Instagram.
Yeah. Yeah. At Primitive, no I between the T and the V.
Right. And then you got moose hunts, you said, in the fall, right?
Yep. Moose and mule deer. So mule deer is in Alberta. Don't know how long I'll be doing that. Things have changed in Southern Alberta quite a bit. And,
with the CWD, we've had two bucks that we've killed down there in the last 2 years, and both of them were bigger, mature bucks, and both of them were CWD positive. So like that big one I shot this fall. No, you know, it's kind of weird, right? In the zone where we are hunting, and I'm assuming now in your zone, which is further east, the testing is voluntary, right?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean that, like, the testing was voluntary in the WMU that I shot that big buck this fall. But I just did it anyways, and sure enough, it was positive. So I don't quite understand the risk involved. Kevin had a relative that had Jacobs-Creutzfeldt disease, and that wasn't pretty. So he's a little sensitive about it. And of course, you know, it's not anything I'm interested in contracting either. You know, I think it's pretty rare, but to contract it from eating meat, and I think you'd have to, you know, there's ways around it by not consuming the bone or the marrow or the spinal column tissue or anything like that. But still, I don't know. Just to me, it's not worth it, which is sad. But I'd rather kill it myself anyways than just have them be shooting them out of helicopters or whatever they're doing, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, I remember, I think this will be my 23rd year down south in that. And, it's been there since I started there. I've had landowners back in the day tell me, yeah, I got this, there's this doe back by the, you know, whatever, that's, she's drooling and her head's like, she's got Parkinson's. I'm like, oh yeah. You know, what do? He goes, I kill them and then I bury it. And it's been around a long time, but I'll tell you what they're doing now is they're destroying all population. Yeah. And in a big way. And I'll tell you, of all the stuff I do, mule deer is my absolute number one favorite. I love it, but I can't. My problem is, you know, I sell these as trophy hunts, you know, like there are big deer still down there, but not like that used to, not like when we hunted it, man. I mean, any given day, we're chasing a 180 easily.
Yeah.
Easily.
And it's not that way now, eh?
And now you really got to hump it. So we'll see what happens this fall. I got a couple guys coming up. They run a TV show. I've had him before. His name's Brian Call, the Gritty Bowman or the Gritty Hunter or something.
Yeah. And Gritty Bowman. Yeah.
They want to hit. Well, I just told him we're going to have to hit some places that have never been really touched, including by me. And we'll just go.
Oh, cool.
But you know, part of their shtick is, you know, staying the night out there. So that's fine. You guys can sleep in a tent. I'm going to the freaking hotel room. You know, that sounds cool, but I'm past that at this point. Whatever.
Dude, that was our very first trip down there. I still have that photo. You had was it you or I that had the wall tent? And
I had a wall tent.
Yeah. So we were staying in the river bottom in that wall tent, and you brought Whitney with you, your old Labrador.
Wow.
And yeah, I still have that photo. And that was our very first time mule deer hunting together down there.
Dude, send me that photo. I'd love to have that. Fall and spring are looking good, and you know, I'm excited for it.
Hey everybody, John Schneider here. I don't know if you know this or not, but we are over at YouTube. So if you head over there, you'll be able to search up at Food Afield Podcast. There's all sorts of short videos, some how-to videos, and high production value type stuff. And the other thing, it'd be great if we could kick this Instagram account in the butt. Head over to Instagram. Again, we're at Food Afield Podcast. I know, really original. It is filled with all sorts of behind-the-scenes stuff, a lot of photography, and then, of course, some entertaining short videos as well. So it'd be great if you gave that a follow. And by all means, please tell your friends and family, anybody that might appreciate this type of content. So thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
Heritage, lifestyle, community. We at Traditional Bowhunter Magazine strive to provide the best traditional experience for you. Our goal is to encourage a welcoming community focused on a lifestyle that honors the heritage of the traditional bow. In the bi-monthly magazine issues, you can read about hunts in faraway places and close to home, wild game cooking, how-tos, technique advice, beginner-friendly articles, and wisdom from our beloved experts. You will also find businesses that have the tools you need to get out into the woods. Want to start reading now? Download the app and enjoy the digital magazine for $10 a year. Just search Traditional Bowhunter Magazine in your favorite app store. Want a print subscription? Subscribe online at tradbow.com and don't forget to place the code FOODAFIELD at the checkout. Traditional Bowhunter Magazine, bringing the traditional community together since 1989.
Talk to me about traditional bow hunting. I've got something kind of exciting that's sort of reaching the goal line here, I guess, is that I've partnered up with Traditional Bowhunter Magazine and we've launched a new podcast series that'll come out once a week. And it will be sort of reflective of the articles that they run in the magazine, the Traditional Bowhunting 101 and To Skin a Cat articles. And we'll be interviewing the authors of those articles, just sort of teaching people about how to get into traditional bow hunting, how to improve with traditional archery and bow hunting and whatnot. So let's talk about that for a minute. If you got a minute, we both talk because we're getting older. I'm 56 now. How old are you now?
58. Just turned 58.
Wow. Gosh, can you believe we're saying that? That just sounds bizarre to hear you say those words. But
Every day.
Yeah. So you mentioned earlier about your shoulders. You know, you can't shoot much anymore. I'm the same way. What would you do differently going back in time to, you know, so that you can be more comfortable with your shooting now as we get older?
That's actually a great question and one that's top of the topics as far in the traditional world right now. I think for me, the issue for me is I just didn't know. Like, I learned how to shoot from a guy named John Schultz, who worked with Howard Hill. And back in the early 80s, it was called Hitting Him Like Howard Hill, and it was a VHS tape. And the modern shooters now would call the way we shoot snap shooting.
Yep.
Which, whatever. But that's the way all those guys shot back then. Fred Bear, Howard Hill. I don't know if Fred touched and go, but he didn't hold it back like they do now. So my problem, John, is the first longbow I bought was an 80-pound longbow. Didn't know. Yep. There was social media. I went from a 1981 from a Martin Firecat with an overdraw. You talk to these new guys now, they don't even know what overdraw is. Well, it's super dangerous, yeah, is what it is. I'm lucky I didn't drive it through my wrist. Have you ever shot an overdraw?
Oh yeah. That's the only way you could get that. You could be in the cool kid club.
Yeah, it was like Easton 2018s with a satellite broadhead and
15 inches.
Yes, very, very short, very dangerous.
So, it was like shooting a pub dart out of your 70-pound compound.
Yeah. But then I switched to, and you remember when I was shooting a self-bow. I shot a self-bow for about 10 years.
I remember that self-bow. That was pretty. I
just dropped down. You know, my first self-bow was a Strunk bow from John Strunk, and I still have it. 91 is when I got that one. And ironically, it's a U-bow, and, you know, U, when it's first crafted, it's a pretty light color. Mine's almost black. It's freaking awesome. And
same with my Osage.
I switched to that. You know, I worked so hard to get close to animals, and at that point wasn't a problem getting close to them, but killing them was a whole different thing. And the last time I shot a self-bow, I shot he was a 6x5 bull elk, 13 yards, hit him with a stone tip, broke on his rib on the way in, quarter of an inch snap, and I hung up the self bow. and got a recurve. And then slowly I've been coming down to where now I'm shooting like 48, 49 pounds. And, you know, I shot that pig last week. I drawing wasn't a problem. Hit my anchor and releasing was good. But if I go out and shoot 20 3D targets, I don't sleep that night. It just needs to be, my right shoulder needs to be replaced. And it's fully from probably not shooting right, not lifting right. You know, all the stuff you do when you're young and you don't care. But in this day and age, John, what you're going to be dealing with, and congratulations, by the way, that's a big, big thing if you're working with traditional bow. No, I think that's awesome. Is it now there's these guys out there, Tom Klum, great guy, guy named Joel Turner, who's doing Shot IQ. There's all these different shooting methods, back tension. Like the process for some of these shots is long. Like you're up, you're back, you hit your anchor, you pull through and you shoot, which is great. But a lot of times for me anyway, my shots sometimes can be very quick, mostly on a mule deer that's coming out of his bed at 18 yards.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting right there on the toilet.
You've been sitting there for the past 3 hours watching his antler times, yes. You know, and then, you've got like 1 second to get the shot off.
So, but I think for the new guys, they're jumping on like Joel Turner stuff, or I think Tom Klum's is the same. Klum's got an extensive, which you should get on your podcast, by the way, but he's got an extensive program online.
Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with him. Yeah.
I have it, but I played around with it, but guys our age, try switching, dude.
Oh, I know, I have.
I destroyed so many arrows, I thought, I'm going to try this 3-under, and just smashing arrows, and at like 15 yards into my wall, I was nowhere near the target, and I'm just like, I'm going to stick with what I know, and maybe not the best, but for new shooters, definitely look into Tom Klum. I think Joel Turner's thing is kind of dealing with target panic and stuff, but there's a lot of resources now versus when we started.
Yeah, but here's the thing, dude. I'm going to push back on this a little bit, right? Is that, I get that there, it's like fly fishing where you have to have this perfect cast and the perfect arm movement and the perfect whatever. And the reality is you just have to put a fly on the water in a natural way, two rod lengths away from you. So you kind of said it, and I'm feeling this too. Like I don't shoot properly. I say that all the time. Don't do what I do because I'm doing it wrong. But we both have killed a lot of animals with our trad bows over the years. And so I don't know. I kind of go back and forth on that, especially when I'm talking to new people. It's like, yes, there's some basics, reaching your anchor point consistently. Practice obviously makes perfect, but I don't know. I'm less and less convinced as I get older that there's just one way to do it. I don't know. Prove me wrong.
No, I think there's a variety of ways to do it, and people do it that way. I just think that, first of all, a 25-year-old young man is not going to think one iota about his shoulders.
Well, there you go, right? Yeah, true.
So, but if they start off with the proper mechanics, which I think there's a lot to that. True. Then maybe their longevity will be longer, because a lot of guys our age now are quitting.
Like, yeah, because they have to.
A gun, or which is totally understandable. I mean, it's either hunt or don't hunt. Well, then whatever.
You got this big problem in the States now with the air bows and crossbows and different things creeping into the archery seasons. So, I don't know. I don't know how much of that is a function of old guys not being able to bow hunt anymore, but I have no data on that. But it's true. So I guess you're right. But the proper mechanics are going to help everything, right? It's like having the proper mechanics of a golf swing or whatever.
I would have, anyone who's new to this, I would definitely look up Tom Klum. He's got a lot of stuff on YouTube and little things here and there. I mean, the whole course, obviously he sells it, and everyone's trying to make money in what they love doing, but
it doesn't make it all evil. I'm not suggesting that at all, but
John, I get a lot of guys in my camp every week that we have these conversations. Some of them are like, this is the only way to shoot. Mm-hmm. One of the top trad guys, for probably 7 years, he doesn't shoot trad anymore, but I've never seen anyone as accurate as a guy named Aaron Schneider.
Oh yeah.
The dude can shoot. And he hunted with me a lot, 7-8 years. We kinda lost contact, but he's done a lot of good for the industry. I could go out with him and watch him shoot. And I mean, and I think a lot of these guys now are gap shooters. The accuracy out to 50 yards
walking,
is insane.
Yeah.
Like would compare to any compound, maybe not,
I get what you're saying.
But you can become very accurate with a stick bow. And the thing is with him is that, and I watched him the way he drew his bow and anchored, it was a lot quicker than what he does on the range. And there's a lot of them I've had up, but we've had these conversations. It's almost like the snap shooting that, or touch and go or whatever you want to call it is kind of taboo right now.
I guess my way of looking at it now, which I don't know, I would argue something's changed with my hunting lately where I don't sweat getting opportunities at all. Like I missed 2 years ago, I missed the buck of my life again at about, I don't know, what was it, 11 or 12 yards, something like that, right?
Yeah.
And it was because my mitt was folded. And so when I was gripping the bow, the arrow was elevated off the shelf of my bow from the fold of my wool mitt. I knew there'd be another opportunity. So the opportunities seem to come a lot easier. I don't know if you found the same thing. As we get older, I guess we just get to be better sort of hunters. We might not be better shots, but we're better hunters, I would say.
I agree. You kind of learn what works, what doesn't work. And with time, you kind of figure out what you can get away with. Because a lot of guys that come from mule deer on a Wednesday. Well, Wednesdays, I used to play platoon on the old, remember the old beta player down at the house,
You remember that? I do.
You know it. Every time I watch Ghostbusters 2, I just start laughing because it reminds me. Anyway, I play something on Wednesday. For a few years, it was platoon. Then I switched it over to Dumb and Dumber because people were losing their minds. It's like, how in the hell do we shoot these? I'm like, well, there's a lot of them, but you can't be thinking that there's one on the other side of the hill. If you screw this one up, you have got to put all of your energy into this deer and it's your day. You're spending day chasing. Even if I have one bedded over here, it doesn't matter. This is a daytime thing. You pick which one you want to go after and let's do it. But then what's the best thing they do? Usually whack-a-mole, where like compound guys, sometimes with the range finders and stick guys, I use a range finder, but they lift up, they hit them with the rangefinder, and I'm back 30 yards going, I need to use a dog collar, a shot collar. And when guys lift up more, once you get the range on your buck, trust it, do it a few times. But if you keep lifting up, I'm going to rock you at number 10. Dog's collar. I've actually thought about it, dude, because there's some guys, trust your yardage, you're 25 yards, dude. You shoot a compound, put every one of them pins on them, and you're going to probably kill them. But
see, in Alberta, it's illegal to use like electronic devices for hunting, electric calls and things like that. But would that fall under that category? I don't think it would. I think you're good. I think should.
Everyone and their mother used the rangefinder, but now they got
I'm talking about the electric collar.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, good. A conservation officer, if he came up and my hunter had a dog collar on and I explained why, he would high five me.
He would. Oh, dude. That's funny. So dude, I would be, I'd have like tracks on my, across my neck.
Oh, dude, from back in the day, you would have permanent Parkinson's at this point.
But I think that's one of the problems with hunting down there back in the day is there were just so many deer. It literally did not matter if you screwed up this stock. And that was my biggest downfall was like, oh, whatever. I'd push it, right? I'd throw the rock trying to get the buck to move or whatever. I just wasn't careful because who cares? I just get the next one. And then at the end of the week, you wonder why you didn't kill anything because that's all you did all week was be an idiot running around in your Sasquatch camo.
So. The one I remember the most, we were up above the Red Deer River just close to where we were staying. And I don't know what you were wearing.
It was like Realtree.
Yeah, it was Realtree. Yeah. And it didn't, it was, and not, no camo really. Blend you
in the prairie grasslands,
but you were coming over the edge and you were glassing because you knew the buck was somewhere, and behind you about 50 yards the buck was walking on the horizon. and you're away, you're like a half mile away, and I'm waving at you like, John, you're pretty intent on finding that buck below you, but he was just walking behind you. He knew you were there, but he was,
oh yeah, he was at a probably fast heard me walk. Being an idiot. Oh.
But then there's, you know, in the one can, you watch me shoot under a freaking massive buck and whatever, but
tell the story. It's one of your favorite stories, I know. Tell the story of that. I might have been hunting antelope while you were hunting mule deer that year. I don't remember. In the truck.
Which story, dude? Which story?
Let her rip, dude. I'm a big boy. I can handle it.
No, I don't remember which story you're talking about. I do remember
the arrow. Where you put the arrow on the dash.
Oh, yeah. No, when you dropped me off and I ended up... I remember I was in these hay bales and I was... I don't know. We probably had a late night back in those days. We usually did once in a while, but I fell asleep in these giant bales and the deer were coming up along the edge of the high fence that the bales were in to eat ironically, the tumbleweeds that were green. And all of a sudden, as I'm laying there, I think this cock pheasant had walked into the bales because it was probably 50 by 50 yard pile of bales, you know, a story high. And he came around the corner. I'm laying there and he erupts. Like he was 5 feet from me when he came around the bale and he just took off cackling, scared the crap out of me. So I kind of woke up and I looked around the side and there's a buck staring at him. Yeah. And I shot him. I remember getting the arrow. It broke somehow. I don't know if I hit his far. I don't know what happened, but no, you just came, picked me up and you were always on the, I don't know if you're on the phone. You're always doing businessman stuff, being, you know, doing your thing, whatever that was with whoever.
Or pouting of having not had an opportunity to mule deer, one or the other.
Or, yeah, when you released a bunch of arrows at an antelope, and I think you boomeranged your bow that one day. But, so no, I laid the arrow on your deal, and you were fired up about something. We're driving, and finally, 15 minutes later, you look, so, by the way, did you see anything? I said, yeah. And yeah, I saw a nice buck. Oh man, that's, you know, whatever. I said, yeah, I put an arrow in him. I said, that's the arrow right in front of you. And
you idiot.
You felt bad. You're like, oh yeah, I guess I should have asked, but we're pretty much used to us picking each other up and going, yeah, nothing happened or I blew everything out.
Yeah. It was such a habit back then,
but those are good times, man. Those were in the field. Good times. I love that country and I'm, yeah, it's different now and I've got some decisions to make on it. I don't know what I'm going to do, but
have you seen DT lately? Yeah. Don Thomas, do you still visit with him regularly?
I saw him last. Yeah. I talked to Don on the phone a couple times a year, maybe, and text with Lori a little bit. I hung out with him last year at the PBS event in Reno. He won a Lifetime Achievement Award and, you know, it was good to see because I mean, he was kind of the guy, you know, I mean, for many years, there was three or four of them that were kind of the highlight guys for our traditional community that definitely, you know, don't have any presence online right now. And the new guys have no clue who they are. And I think it's valuable that they know who the guys are, who the men and women, Connie, yeah. Renfro, she spoke. I remember reading her in Traditional Bowhunter. She had a really good story and good group of people, but we're diminishing, it seems, not traditional in the traditional world. I think we have as many as we've ever had because some high profile guys are shooting it. Interesting time to be in this game because of technology and it's incredible.
Well, you're right about that, about sort of, I don't know what the word is, preserving that heritage with some of those people that have come before us, like Don Thomas and TJ and other guys like that. That's why it was such a big deal to sort of connect with Traditional Bowhunter magazine, because I mean, I've been getting that magazine off and on since the late 80s or early 90s, you know, and it was just the thing. It was the thing before there was anything else, you know. It was just, you looked forward to getting that issue every month, and now they've gone to one every 2 months. Well, they've been doing that for 20 years now, I think, haven't they? It's been a while. But it's so important to sort of bring to light these old timers, you know, and they're not that much older than we are. So you just killed a pig the other day too. You texted me that young pig that you killed.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's so, what's fun about down here, John, is that, you know, if you average how many arrows you shoot at an animal in a year in Canada, not a lot.
One.
Whatever. Down here, it's every time I go out, I'm likely going to have an opportunity at a pig, but I'm kind of holding out for a big, you know, I want to get a shoulder mount pig. I think they're really cool.
Oh, really cool.
But, from a meat, I'm sorry, what do you call it? Wild meat, wild game outcome. How do you say that?
Wild food.
Yeah. You can't beat it.
Yeah. No kidding.
It's,
you said that pig, you smoked that pig, over the course of an afternoon, and you said it was like almost too tender. Hey.
Yeah, it was a learning experience trying to get the hair off, and I did it wrong, but I was pouring, you know, hot water. Well, you need to have scalding hot water. I wasn't quite scalding, so it took me longer than usual. Next time I'll know exactly. It has to be scalding, and you just got to kind of go, and then you hit it with a torch, which I didn't have a torch here. So it turned out well. That was maybe a 15-pound pig, 20 maybe, not even. And
perfect.
Yeah, it took about 6 hour cook, and good flavor. It just, yeah, it just wasn't, it was just, there's such a word as too tender. It was too tender.
That's awesome. Well, but I would love a chance to come down there and visit with you, number one, but you know, to go out and shoot a pig, that would be really cool.
Yeah. Oh,
you know what else we didn't talk about? I really wanted to talk to you about, so we'll save it for another time, is turkey hunting.
Mm-hmm.
Shit, I forgot all about that, because you are slaying turkeys, and you hunt turkeys a fair bit. Are you doing that this year?
Yeah, I'm going to hunt turkeys in Washington State in 2 weeks. In Washington, there's three different species of turkey, Eastern,
Rios,
and Miriam. So I got a really good spot for Miriams and a really good spot for Rios. But you got to understand that a lot of these places, like Washington State, for instance, they're pretty new there. And they're not super smart. Kind of like Southern BC, you know, I mean, there's places where these things are freaking intelligent, and Alabama and the South, where guys hunt them a lot and they don't talk much. Where I hunt them, there's a lot of them, and yeah, they're just kind of running around like idiots. So it's a different type of turkey, in my opinion, from a smart standpoint, but still turkeys, and their kill zones are super small, man, with an arrow. Like I'm not good enough to try a headshot.
I wanted to pick your brains about that, but anyways, we'll save it for another time. I'm gonna let you go now, but yeah, I'm headed there. I'm just gonna use shotgun this time, because number one, I want, you know, it'd be cool to get a turkey for the first time in my life. So, but definitely have it in my mind to bow hunt those. So, are you hunting turkeys down in Texas at all? Do you have a chance anywhere?
Not this year. I have a deal with my friends where I'm at right now, where, you know, I hunt whenever I want for pigs. I don't have any interest in their whitetails. After hunting the bow zone, it doesn't really crank me up it's highly contentious down here. Like, they have to be a certain age. They have to be, the rack. It's not fun for me to hunt them down here. So I'll go out. I haven't shot any does here. They invited me to come out and shoot does, but my freezer was pretty solid, you know? And, but no, you're going to have fun with turkeys, John. It's like elk hunting, and they don't smell. You can set up your blind right close to their tree or whatever, put your decoy out. I've had them rub up against my blind when they're puffed out, literally.
Right.
Yeah. It's,
I can't wait.
They're pretty cool though. They're a little rapid.
All right, bud. Well, we'll stay in touch. I can't wait to see the annual picture or the video that you send me of you playing a turkey with your longbow. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, I hope so. I'd like to get a Miriam, but it's fun. You're going to have a lot of fun, John, and you'll learn a lot.
Good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. All right, my friend. Well, thanks for the visit, and let's catch up again sometime soon. When you get up here in BC, we should maybe make a point, because you're not that far away, right? So maybe I'll make a point of coming out and visiting one day. It'd be nice to meet Lana finally. Okay. Well, let's touch base then. All right, my friend. Man.
Thank you.
Thank you.
See you, John. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Food Afield podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode. The Food Afield podcast is created by me, John Schneider. Much of the music that goes into the show is created by my friend Kevin Coswin. And thank you also to Emma for the intro before every episode. And thank you so much to the listeners of the show. We couldn't do this without you. Be sure to head on over to Instagram. You can check out our account there, Food Afield Podcast. There's a lot of behind-the-scenes stories and photographs that go on there. But if you really want the behind-the-scenes stuff, then head on over to the website, foodafieldpodcast.com. Check out the members' benefits. We have member-exclusive articles on the blog that really go behind the scenes and tell stories of the different hunts and different adventures that we're on. We also have recipes there, how-to articles, all sorts of stuff. We really try to make it valuable for our members. Don't forget to leave a review whenever you get a chance on whatever platform you're listening to the show. And thank you so much for sharing the Food Afield podcast with your family and friends.